My online course is currently available that will teach you everything you need to know to be a great parent and a great teacher. Link in the show notes.
People, they'll comment and they'll say things like, you know, you have toxic positivity. You know, there's so much wrong in education. Stop trying to make ignoring the issues. I'm not saying that. I'm saying in the educational system, there's a whole lot that's not right, but it's not going to change overnight. And for those that recognize that there are students showing up tomorrow, students that are hurting, that need support, that need to be loved, cared for, and have that burning passion inside of them that says, I want to make a difference in this child's life to help turn it around, flip it around, and help them be the best version of themselves. I can't push that perspective on you, and I won't try. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I never say go from good to great. Never said go from good to great. I'm saying some of you are good. All right. But I'm talking to those that want to be great.
What's my name? What's my name?
Welcome to Mr. Chaz's Leadership, Parenting, and Teaching Podcast, where I introduce you to the people that can help you on your leadership, parenting, or teaching journey. And today, I have an administrator in the house talking to us about a lot of different things, but I'm going to let him introduce himself per usual, and then we're just going to jump into the conversation.
Jump on in. Hey, everybody. I'm Darrell Williams, Jr. I am a school speaker and a school administrator here in Charlotte, North Carolina. Shout out on my East Coast family. I've been administrator for about 2 years, but definitely a teacher at heart, always a teacher at heart. Much love for the teachers. And my focus is really just making sure that we help students generate the skills that they need in order to eventually live the life that they choose and not a life that they're forced to settle for. So that's me.
Okay. Let me just ask you a little bit about your journey and kind of like where, how you got to be, because you've been in ministry for 2 years. I imagine there was some kind of a teaching journey. Like, why did you get into this? What was that like for you? Why did you choose to move in it all, move into administration? Tell me all that.
All of that. So let's go back to why I even started teaching at the beginning. I knew that I was going to be called to teach. That was from like elementary, from high school. I started teaching math because they always told me that there's a need for math teachers. And if I could be proficient in math, I would always have a job. And they were definitely right. I always, with knowing math and being proficient in math and growing students in math, always had a job. And then it just got to one of those things where I was seeing success in the class. I was teacher of the year in Alabama, my school in Alabama. My family moved to North Carolina. I was teacher of the year again. And I was just doing great, growing students. And I felt really great about that because I knew that I was, you know, working on my impact. But then that third year, they asked me, I felt the evaluations coming. They were doing teacher of the year evaluations again. And I was like, honestly, I don't want to be teacher of the year again. It's just, there's a lot of paperwork that comes along with it. I was like, I've done that. I appreciate it, but I don't. But can I be on the evaluator side? Like, can I help you guys determine who the next teacher of the year should be? And the principal was like, yeah. So then I did some different classroom observations. And that's when I realized some of the things that I was doing that were obvious to me that other people were just missing. And I was like, oh, man, like if you just made this tweak or if you just did this a little bit differently, then you could see some more growth in students. And that's what got me on a leadership track. I was like, man, I really want to help teachers. Because when I was in my own silo in teaching, I thought everybody was doing this.
Yeah.
After I started observing, I was like, oh, snap. So that's when I said, okay, I want to help some teachers to see the success that I saw.
That's crazy, because that's exactly how it was like for me too. When I was just in my own classroom, I was just focused on me, you know, even when people came to me like for advice, I was, you know, and kind of shared advice and they said it was impactful. I still didn't realize what I was doing was so different from what a lot of other people were doing. Until I got into a role where I got to actually travel and see different schools and different teachers. And then that's when it became like same thing like you, like, oh, wow, like you can make a huge difference if you just do this a little different, if you just add this, or you ever thought about this. And so that's crazy. And you know, it's also, I'm actually in North Carolina as well. So we're actually not very far from each other. So that's pretty cool. So you did the evaluations thing, and then you went straight into becoming an administrator. Is that what happened?
I went into that last year when I started evaluating, then I became the lead on the team, and they gave me an extra planning period where I could do some coaching as well as teaching. So I still teach them eighth grade math, and then I was coaching. That's the year we hit the pandemic in 2019. And then they asked me to coach full time because obviously we were in a shift. How are we going to grow these students? We're virtual, we're hybrid. So that's when I became instructional coach. And I did that for 2 years around the district. We have a real small district. It was three schools, but I had all three schools. And then honestly, what happened was I was at one school and the principal was just like, what you're doing with my teachers, I need that to happen every day. Because I was rotating. I'll do 2 days at this school, 2 days at that school, and 1 day at the third school. So she said, two times a week is not enough. I need you here every day. The only position we have available is assistant principal. And I was like, well, I guess I'll take that.
Okay. So how was that shift for, did you prefer? I mean, I guess you're kind of still in the administrative, but did you prefer that, or did you prefer actually just coaching the teacher? Because I'll say for myself that like I did a little bit of like the standing in for administrators and I know for myself, for me personally, I didn't like the job. I much preferred actually like just being able to really just focus on the classroom stuff and not all the other operational stuff. So like, how was that for you? How was that shift for you?
Yeah, man. If I could be honest, it was, I would like to go back to coaching. I don't know if it's in the cards for me right now, but I would like to do the coaching that I was doing at the three different schools, but just at this one school. And because like you said, now that I'm an administrator, there's so many other things, busing logistics, you know, lunchroom etiquette, like how are we going to get these kids lined up, dealing with parents, which isn't necessarily too bad, but it does start to consume you and it takes me away from, I feel like what I'm having that immediate impact, being able to get into classrooms and support teachers as much as I really, really want to, because there's other things that we just have to do.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this, because definitely on the internet, and not even just the internet, just, I mean, in my experience, just in education and most teachers I talk to, even like when I travel or like, I'd say maybe a little bit less when I travel, because the administrator is usually in the room with them. But when I talk to teachers and they're just like alone and the administrator is not in the room, I hear a lot of complaints about leadership in education. And I wonder, like, and I'm sure you've seen some of it, at least online, is it justified, like, that the leadership, did you get into leadership and you're like, you know, like, oh, this is, they've been doing it all wrong, and like I have the cheat codes now, like why couldn't you just do this, like it's so easy, or like there's something else, like tell me, like is all the criticism that administrators get justified? And let's dive a little bit more into that.
I won't say it's all justified, obviously, but I do think that being on the other side now, I do see why administrators get the rap they do, for some that get the negative rap, because it is really hard. And as much as we want to support teachers and students, there's so many things to juggle. And honestly, some people are not really that great at juggling a whole lot of things. And sometimes it comes off as, I don't necessarily care about what you have in this moment. Can I tell a story real quick?
Yeah, please.
So I think, all right, so real briefly, my friends and I, we went to New Orleans for my 30th birthday, no, 29th birthday, had a great time out on Bourbon Street, saw some cool things, great. We were coming back to the car and it was 1 o'clock in the morning. And when we got to the car, we noticed that the windows had been smashed and broken in too. So the car was broken into. And in that moment, I realized that it was my rental car. I was the one that rented it. My name was on the lease agreement and I did not opt for the insurance. So as I'm looking at the car, the only thing I could think about in the moment was the fact that I'm gonna have to come out of pocket to pay for this. Like, however much the damage is, I'm gonna come out of pocket to pay for this. It's gonna affect my family finances. It's gonna affect my daughter in preschool. It's gonna affect all these things. And I had two other friends with me. My other friend, Dominic, he had some DJ equipment in the car that was in the trunk. And in his brain, he was like, oh man, my equipment is, somebody probably stole it. My other friend, Brandon, he had like his passport and stuff in the car. He's like, somebody probably went through that. In that moment, I couldn't show up for them, right? Mm-hmm. In that moment, I couldn't worry about Dominic and his laptop. Or let's say I couldn't, but I didn't. I didn't worry about Dominic and his thousands of dollars of equipment that might have been stolen. I wasn't worried about Brandon and his passport that might have been stolen, because I felt like me and my family are being threatened right now because this is going to be finances that I have to pay for. And a lot of administrators, I would say, feel the same way. We're focused on the main thing, which could be the growth of the school, the achievement, you know, student success. And then when other things pop up, it looks as if we're insensitive because, oh, they don't worry about me and my feelings. They're not worried about this and not worried about that. Just like my friends were thinking. And honestly, in that moment, they were right. I wasn't being a good friend. I wasn't being sensitive to their needs. But it's really because I was so focused on how it was affecting me. And I can definitely see how administrators get in that realm where they're focused on the goal, the goal, the goal. And they start to maybe not focus on the people are around and how it affects everybody else as well.
Mm. You know, too, I think that story and keeping up with that. I think that a lot of times in an educational setting that your friends, your teachers don't even necessarily see that the windows are smashed in, right? They just see that like my passport is being taken, my DJ equipment is gone. And you don't seem to care about it. And they don't even, you know, because everyone's in their own different silos, like, you know, we talked about, like, so they don't even, a lot of times they're not even aware of the windows that got smashed in, and aware of kind of what you're dealing with and why you might not be as focused or why you might not be as kind of attentive to the things that they're struggling with, the very real needs that they have and that they're struggling with.
Because we're looking at it from different lenses. And I think that's the difference between an administrator that seems to be a good one versus one that others say is not. There's definitely probably some bad administrators, but I think those that are just kind of okay, you're good, or I think maybe they're just focused on the main thing and it's hard for them to see it from somebody else's lens. But those that are great administrators, they're the ones that when they see it, they see the whole picture. Like in that moment, I was not a good friend. I wasn't good. I wasn't seeing the picture from their lens, thinking that they were affected as well. But a good administrator is going to see not only the problem, dang, we don't have insurance, how's it going to come out of pocket? But then also looking around and notice, man, he's stressed, he's anxious. How can I show up for everybody as well as, mm-hmm. you know, focus on the main goal?
Mm. So, okay. So what I'm hearing from you is even when the windows get smashed in, when there's a crisis, is kind of what one of those things that makes a great administrator is to still be looking out for the people on your team and not just focus on what your goal is, also be able to see the world from their perspective of what they're struggling with and what their needs are. Is that kind of
saying? Yeah, absolutely.
So, okay, cool in theory, right? But then how do you actually execute on that? How do you actually do that? Because this is like, it is, you're threatened, right? You're in a survival mode right there. You're thinking about the well-being of your family, right? And I think that's an appropriate analogy too, because I think a lot of times, even with when we're in the classroom, we kind of get into survival mode and we kind of go down that rabbit hole too, right? Of just like, it could start off from, you know, maybe confrontation with a student or maybe another teacher or maybe with the administrator. And then it's like, oh, it's like my job on the line. Like, are they going to think that like, I'm a good or bad teacher? Like, I'm already like burnt out. Like, I'm not going to get enough sleep if I don't, I'm not going to be able to do this for my family. Cause now I have to, now this is going to take time out of something else. And I just want to clock out at the end of the day. I just want to be done and spend time with my family. Now you're taking time away from my family or money away from my family or potential livelihood. And so like all these things are happening really in everyone's mind. And then, you know, there's the dynamic of obviously like everyone's got their own different lenses. You know, there's their perspective of the students, there's the perspective of the teachers, there's the perspective of the administrators, everyone in between, the parents, all these things are happening at the same time. So how do you actually, in a crisis, actually make sure that everyone is taken care of and everyone is supported?
Well, I'll take it back one step, because I think in a crisis is not when you do that. It's mm-hmm. before the crisis. And that is the difference. So let me ask you this. If we're sticking with the same analogy with the car, had I walked up to the car and saw that the windows were smashed, but I knew that I had insurance, how do you think I would have responded in that moment?
You would have been a lot. The reaction in your body would have been a lot less intense. Sure, there would have been like a little, maybe a little bit of worry, but you would have been already more regulated off the bat.
Right. Literally, about 6 months after, I was rear-ended, hit and run. Somebody hit me and left. I was in the car with my family and everything, and they just took off. I turned and checked on my family, checked on my wife, checked on my kids, make sure everybody was good. And my wife was like, "You're not going to chase them? Like, you're not going to go?" And I was like, "Nah, I'm covered. Like, we have the insurance. Like, I already know. Like, this is not the rental car. Like, we have full comprehensive. I'm good. If somebody hits me and runs, insurance got it, right?" So it's different. I can show up for the people around me when I have a system of protection that is surrounding me, right? So when I was with my friends in New Orleans, if I would have had insurance, I would probably been able to be like, not thinking about, "Oh man, how are we going to pay for this window?" But I'd be like, "Yo, let's help and let's see if your DJ stuff is still in the trunk, right? Let's look around and see if they have your ID." I can show up for them in that moment because I'm not worried about that other stuff. So you don't, in a crisis, have to panic and figure out how can I show up for everybody else if you have that system of protection, which is why I always like to say, the school vision is great, mission is fantastic. We need all those things, but it's systems that really carries your school to success, because we don't rise to the size of our dreams. We rest on the strength of our systems. Strong systems is what's going to carry us. You can have a big dream, but lots of people have big dreams, which means the having of the dream is not the indicator of whether or not you're going to be successful. But you, if you have a faulty system, that dream will not be realized. So you have to have a big dream and a strong system. So we don't rise to the size of our dreams. We rest on the strength of our systems.
Okay. So I got to ask you, I want to go into some detail here. Can you share like a system or two of that, you know, you've seen or have been put in place that are like kind of those almost crisis prevention systems, to maybe help some people out there. And then maybe as a little follow-up question to that, how do you, if you don't have those systems in place, how do you start to create those systems? It might be two really big questions, but
Awesome. Let's get it. This literally happened last year. Of course, we have lots of systems in place, but this is the first one that jumped in my mind, because I think a lot of people are aware of the sub crisis. As you're aware of the teacher crisis, you know that there's also a sub crisis.
Right.
So for us, what was happening was we would get to school in the morning, or we'd wake up in the morning and check our phones, and we'd have 3-4 text messages from teachers. "Can't make it in today. My son is sick. Can't make it in today. Not feeling well. Got to check on my mom." Those types of things. We would then get to work and panic, or be stressed, like, who's going to cover that class? We don't want to split up the class and burden other teachers. All right, we don't want to call somebody off their planning, because now that's taking the time away from them. You know, so now we're faced with all these terrible choices, really. So then my principal actually had the idea. She was like, "What if we just prepare to have a sub? Like, if we just have subs that are just always on call, but not just on call, but in the building." So what we did is we hired 8 daily positions, or 8 positions that they will come every single day, and they knew where they would be assigned. So if somebody in kindergarten or first grade was absent, this is your role. If somebody in second or third is absent, that's your role, right? And if nobody was absent, then they would fill in with doing typical kind of TA duties or boards or some tasks. But that was all described beforehand. Saying all that to say, now when we show up to school at 7:45 in the morning and a teacher calls out, we're not like, because we get this a lot. I see it in my TikTok comments. People will say something like, "I had to go, you know, check on my son. He had 104 degree fever at daycare. My principal said I couldn't go pick him up because we didn't have coverage." Right. But that's a real thing, because if there's no coverage, really, I'm not saying that they should have said, "No, you can't pick up your kid." But I see from the administrative lens why she's saying, There's literally nobody to cover your class. If you leave, who's going to be with these other 28 kids? You know what I'm saying? So that's why she would say no. But we weren't faced with that because now when somebody said I had to go pick up my kid, we're like, okay, cool. Ms. Wilson's going to cover. She's already in the building, you know? So that was a system that we created to solve a problem. And to answer the second part of your question, so what do you do is you think about the problems that consistently arise, the things that are taking you off course of your vision, the things that are causing you panic, causing you stress, causing anxiety, those fires that consistently run up, and don't just wait for them to happen. I would say, like, don't accept problems and become stressed. Anticipate problems and build systems. So think about the problems that are going to arise based off of what's been happening historically and build a system to be your strength so that in that moment you can show up for the people that are involved.
Mm. It seems so simple too. I mean, pretty much what you're saying is like, if you keep running into the same problem, like find a way to solve it. Like consistently, right? Like, and
because how many times do administrators say things like, I'm putting out fires all day, or I'm consistently putting out fires? Let's spend less time in putting out fires and more time in fire prevention. Ask yourself, what are the fires that are consistently sparking? Right. And how can we build a system to prevent that from being a thing?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So you pretty much, instead of just having subs, you know, calling subs and saying, you just already just made sure they're in the, you just had to hire more people. Right. And you were able to find people to hire. Was it just that easy to just get the 8 people?
It was, because we were, from a financial standpoint, we were using a service that we were paying for. And for that service, we would pay for them. And whenever we had somebody out, we would call them and they would send a sub to our school. So that was already a budgeted line item. So we were already paying that. So what we decided to do was take that money that we were allocating to pay that service and just essentially build our own service. So then we went on Indeed and we posted sub positions. It's easier to fill a sub position, in my experience, than it is to fill a certified teacher position. And then we hired 8 subs with that. That's how we got to the number 8, because we realized the amount that we're spending here, we can afford this amount of people to be in the building.
Oh, yeah. Well, great. Well, great. Awesome. So let me, and I'm glad that was, you know, yeah, you had such a common problem that most people, most organizations in education face, and you were able to solve it. And we're constantly running into challenges and obstacles in education. And they make it hard. I mean, it makes it hard for the administrator. I mean, you talked about kind of all the things that, you know, kind of pull you away from the actually being in the classroom and supporting the teachers. And maybe there's a discussion of like, maybe your role should be more, you know, supportive and maybe less operational. Maybe there should be a whole job that's kind of focused on the operational part of it, or a whole job at least focus on the supporting, you know, teachers in the, you know, the education or in the classroom side of things. What things kind of like in the overall education system would you like to see change, or you feel like maybe impact you, or things that you maybe think could be improved? And let's just start there. What are some things that you think that can be improved in the education system?
I think one thing that can be improved is the way that we evaluate what students should be learning. Meaning, in a nutshell, this is honestly one of the things that's been irking me for the last couple of years. The pandemic really brought it to my attention, as again, I was still in the classroom during the pandemic. So on the outside of the pandemic, what happened was, like, it, in terms of student expectation and standards, nothing changed. Although 60% of students were at home virtual learning and 40% of that was doing nothing. You know what I'm saying? So we came in, and because a student was 12 years old, they're having sixth grade content. And so now they're getting sixth grade content. The question I have is, who told you that just because I'm 12, I now, or I'm now able or ready to understand what the concept of proportionality is and how to operate with proportional relationships. Although I don't have a strong foundation on how to divide numbers at all. So I don't know what the answer is, which is why I hesitated at the beginning, because I don't know if I want to bring it up if I don't have a solution. But if I had the solution, I would definitely share it. But we have to do something about, in the evaluation phase, that instead of just grouping kids by age, right? How can we group them more really based off of cognitive ability? And I understand that is going to be a huge culture shock, a huge culture shift, because we're accustomed to your child being promoted to the next grade. You don't, a 14-year-old, yes, they're going to go ahead and they go into high school, right? So it's really hard if you're a 14-year-old in classes with 11-year-olds. And so that's, I get that. So I'm not worried about, I'm not there yet. That's why I see why I get why it's not working. But at the same time, it just pains me when I'm in a class and I'm teaching, and just because you're in eighth grade, this is the standard I need to teach you, even though I know you need some fourth grade content. But standards say, I got to teach this eighth grade content to you.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to find you want to be able to meet students more where they're at, rather than just expecting them, everyone, to kind of be at the same place.
Yeah, because they're not. They never are. And I believe that when growth is prioritized, mastery is inevitable. If we just consistently grow, eventually mastery is going to be a thing. Even if it doesn't happen immediately, it's going to happen eventually. But I've actually done this experiment over the last couple of years, coming off the pandemic, when I was coaching, when I was assistant principal. Coaching after the pandemic, they told us nothing's going to change. Stick to the pacing guide. We stuck to the pacing guide. Students would, at the end of the unit, they would not do well in the assessment, went on to the next unit, not doing the assessment. We just kept going. We covered all of the content. Mastery levels were extremely low, super low. But they were saying we have to expose them to all the content. The following year, I said, let's ignore the pacing guides. Give students what they need. Just give them what they need. If you need to go back, if you need to spend an extra day, take time on it. We did not see the full content. Mastery levels were similar. They weren't better. I'm not going to lie. They were not better. They were similar. But they were similar year one. Year two, they were better. Now, here I am, year three. My belief is, if we consistently get focused on growth, I'm not saying it's going to happen right now and here at the end of year one, but 3, 4, 5 years down the line, that's what's going to lead to mastery. Not just covering content that they're not grasping, but really building a strong foundation of skills that they can understand and apply and continue to grow. So that's what I think.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. I see on your shirt, your merch, I'm going to do a little plug for you. It says, good teachers teach subjects, great teachers teach students. Yes. What does that mean?
It's really a spinoff, essentially what I was just saying. Subjects are cool. And I'm grateful for the good teachers, because bad teachers don't teach subjects at all. Bad teachers, they're not even showing up. They're just here. I literally had a teacher in my building a couple years ago say that she was just here because we had healthcare and she was working an hourly job and hourly job didn't. She's like, I don't care nothing about none of that. I just know. So y'all give me healthcare. I was like, wow, that's crazy. So bad teachers, they're just here. Right. You know what I'm saying? They're just showing up. So I am appreciative of the good teachers that show up, and at least they're like, I'm going to teach the content. You know, I'm going to give students the things that they need. But it's okay. It's not all right to just be good, because good teachers, they're going to just cover the content. But students also need to know other skills, like how to communicate confidently. Right. Good teachers, they're going to stick to the standards, but students also need to know other things, like how to stand for what matters. Like, good teachers are going to teach subjects, which is fine, but great teachers are going to teach students, which means I'm going to give the students the things that they need in order to be successful human beings. That goes into life skills development, that goes into character development, that helps them to, like I was mentioning earlier, learn the skills that they need in order to generate choices for themselves. Because that's essentially what's going to help somebody be an effective human being. Subjects are great. Awesome. Like, we need subjects. Yes, I get that. But if I can be real, and I said the same thing to my students, if I can be real, I'm teaching you the Pythagorean theorem, and some of you after 12th grade are never going to see it again. Some of you see it again in college. Some of you after college will never see it again. You know, so it's not necessarily the content the content that you need to hold on to. But what I'm trying to help you understand is the mindset that says, I'm going to take something I know nothing about and struggle with it until I figure it out. Like, that's the purpose of what is a lot of the content that I'm teaching you. So it's not necessarily that I'm focused on the content. I'm focused on the student. What does the student need? And how can I get that to them? And it's not always what's in a textbook. Sometimes it's those life skills of character development and that self-confidence, right? That the belief in themselves, the mental toughness and grit, those are the things that we need to be developing in students, because those are the skills that transfer and still allow them to do whatever it is they want in life.
Mm. So, you know, but okay, you bring a really interesting, this is really great, because like, there's like this debate about like, that's not, I mean, amongst teachers, like that's where a lot of teachers will say, that's not even our job. That's the parent's job to teach them how to be successful in life and these kind of social emotional skills that you're talking about and the character development. A lot of teachers will say, That's not my job. My job is to teach you math, to teach you the Pythagorean theorem. Like, that's my job. And that's it. To teach you how to cite an MLA format. That's my job. Right. And so what's your kind of response to a teacher who feels this way?
They're absolutely right. That is their job. And a lot of teachers do think that is their job. And a lot of teachers are good. I'm not talking to the good teachers. I'm talking to the great ones. Like, good teachers, again, are needed. And if you, I just believe that there are those of us that have a different calling. And for those that just want to show up and teach, I promise you there are no hard feelings, because as you're saying, that is your job. I want to help you to be able to teach well, to teach effectively, to teach the standards and make sure students get it. I got that. But I know that there's a subset of people who recognize that although they're supposed to be getting it at home, they're not. That whoever's teaching them at home that's trying, they don't even know how to do it the better way. And I have 28, 33 lives in my classroom that I just want to see them be the best version of themselves. I just want to go forth and live a productive life and make a difference in this world. And I know that my job is to be a great teacher and go beyond just teaching the content. My job is to be a great teacher and give them the things that they need in order to be a successful human being. And again, that's not going to be everybody, but that's why not everybody's great. But the great teachers are going to go above and beyond. Do I believe that we need to get paid more? Absolutely. Is it a thankless job? Yeah, sure. Sometimes. Are you going to get through to everybody? Absolutely not. But I know that there's some people like me that have that yearning in their heart that says, I know that I'm making a breakthrough for somebody. And I know that I'm called to be here to do this thing for somebody in this classroom. And I'm going to make a difference in that child's life.
Mm.
That's what it takes to be great.
So how do you get there? You know, how do you get from like, sure, not everyone wants to be there. Some people may even recognize like, okay, you can do that, but I don't want to do that. How do you, like, people who have chosen, or maybe you can even share just, you know, personally for you, maybe you've seen or talked to other teachers too, who've kind of made that switch to from good to great. Like, what is it that in your mind that kind of changes your mindset from, I'm just here to teach the, well, actually let's do the whole spectrum. So the bad teachers, I'm just showing up because you guys have healthcare and, you know, I'm just a body here in the classroom until I'm not here. And, you know, whatever happens in between doesn't really matter to me. So just the bad teacher, the good teacher is like, hey, I really want to teach you MLA format. And that's my role and nothing else outside of that. Any other mess or character development, not my role, not my job, like go talk to your parents or whatever. And then the great teacher of I want to see you as a person, Daryl, I want to see you succeed and have choices in your life. And I want you to be able to be successful and fulfilled. How do you make those jumps, or like, what are the, or at least from your perspective, what are the jumps in like perspective? Why make those jumps? You know, I don't know. I probably didn't phrase the question very well, but I think you know what I'm trying to get at here.
Yeah. And it's tough because I don't know if one, first of all, everybody doesn't make the jump, but I also say that not everybody is required to make the jump. I will say that bad teachers, there's probably not much of a place for you. I would appreciate it if you find something else to do. We don't need bad teachers filling the building. But again, I will say that good teachers are fine. It's fine to have good teachers in the building. And if you just want to be a good teacher, that's great. I was listening to somebody recently talking about the fact that he's the CEO of a company, you know, and I think it was Gary Vee. Like, he's the CEO of the company and he's trying to buy the Jets and things like that. He said, but I also recognize that I am the CEO of the company and my grind looks different than my employees. Like, I'm trying to buy the Jets. Like, I'm trying to be worth billions. But I do have some employees who are cool just accepting their $70,000 income, clocking out at 5 p.m. and going home to their family. And I'm saying the same thing. There are definitely some people who are cool working 8 to 3, clocking out and going home and knowing I taught MLA format. And I honestly have nothing against that. But I don't know if there's a perspective switch that I'm going to encourage for you to want to be great. I think that it's an innate something that was put inside of us that are called to be great. I think that that's something that's a little bit different. Similar to how I cited Gary Vee's grind. Nobody told him, or I don't know if they told him or not, but I think that's just an innate grind that was instilled within him. And he has his own vision and mission. And he says, I want to buy the Jets. Like, I want to be worth billions. That teacher that is great is the one that has that vision that says, I want to make a huge impact in students' lives beyond just what they can learn in the textbook. So it may not be, again, I always like to say, like, that's not my role. And some people, they'll comment and they'll say things like, you know, you have toxic positivity. You know, there's so much wrong education. Stop trying to make ignoring the issues. I'm not saying that. I'm saying in the educational system, there's a whole lot that's not right, but it's not going to change overnight. And for those that recognize that there are students showing up tomorrow, students that are hurting, that need support, that need to be loved, cared for, and have that burning passion inside of them that says, I want to make a difference in this child's life to help turn it around, flip it around, and help them be the best version of themselves. I can't push that perspective on you, and I won't try. Yeah. I never say go from good to great. Never said go from good to great. I'm saying some of you are good. All right. But I'm talking to those that want to be great.
Mm. You recognize that. Is there a way that you can recognize, I don't know, on a year two, I don't know how much hiring you've done. Is there a way that you could recognize from the interview process some things that you hear or notice or feel or vibe something? Because I hear, yeah, good teachers are good, need it. I mean, honestly, even you might even need some bad teachers just so that the good teachers and the great teachers can do their thing. So we have enough teachers in the building. But I know that, like, I would prefer to have more great teachers around me in my building, be able to recognize them, to be able to speak to them, and really give them the support or uplifting or job or whatever that they need. Like, so is there a way to recognize those great teachers?
There are definitely some qualities, but sometimes it's built over a couple of years, or not say a couple of years, but it's built as they continue to gain experience. So in the interview process, some of the things that I hear, I'll put it like this. We mentioned that this year because it's actually another system. This is the second system that came to my mind when you asked me the system question earlier. But this year, as we were going through the candidate pool, there was just a lot that did not have certifications, didn't have a lot of experience transitioning from other fields and things like that. And we said, okay, this is the candidate pool. Like, this is who it's going to be. Let's stop trying to pretend like we're going to find this person, you know, that, like, 20 years of experience that just wants to come to our school. Like, they're cool where they are. The people that are applying to our school, this is who it is. So what do we need to do to help them to be strong teachers? Just want to help them to be strong teachers. And then what we did was we created a coaching system within inside the building. Not going to get into it, but we hired an instructional coach. We have coaches from each grade level. So it's like, no matter who comes in here, we're going to coach them and teach them the way that we do things here and help you to be an effective teacher. But so what that meant for me was in the interview process, I honestly stopped asking questions about your experience, your history, your education. And I started getting questions that would help me understand the things that we can't teach, the intangibles. You can't teach a love for students. So I asked questions like, tell me about a time where you had a struggling student and how did you deal with it? You know, so I would hear those more so those types of questions. Tell me about your philosophy on, you know, on students or not on students. That's not a question I asked. Sorry. Tell me your educational philosophy or tell me your philosophy on students that are a grade level or two behind. And as I'm hearing answers, when people are saying things like, well, I believe that all students can learn. Or I believe that, you know, I can be the one to reach them. You know, when I'm hearing things like that, I'm like, okay, I can't teach that sort of belief. I can't teach a bubbly personality. I can't teach somebody who loves and cares for students. Those are the people that we were hiring. Because I can teach you the content, yeah. But what I can't teach you are the intangibles.
Yeah. So it sounds like looking for those intangibles, those kind of soft skills, and then also sounds like being intentional about creating an environment where a good teacher could go to great, right? Or a great teacher can feel supported and feel like that they can actually be great there is kind of what I'm hearing.
Absolutely.
That is huge. That is huge. Let me ask you this. Is there like, how do you figure out what is the way, because we talked about like how a lot of the operational stuff will kind of take you away from the teachers and being in the classroom and like supporting those humans, those people. What's your process or system or way for identifying when a teacher might need some more support or talk or conversation or like, how do you make sure in the day to day that teachers are feeling supported and they are getting what they need?
It's crazy. Don't get mad at me. So the answer to that, the system that you create, the system to be able to do that is to create systems.
Okay. Right? Because
what it is, teacher support is what I heard you ask about. Teacher support should be on the forefront of our mind. The reason why we can't get to teacher support is because we're being pulled away to do the other things. I wouldn't say create a system for teacher support, because a lot of times when I think of system, I think something that could run on its own. So if I think a system for teacher support, that would kind of be put that off on somebody else or have like an automated Google sheet where they check in. That's not what I'm saying. We want to be personable. So I think you want to create systems to put out the rest of the fires that we were talking about earlier that would relieve you to go and show up for the teachers that needs you in that moment. So teacher support should be one of the main priorities. So when I have systems that's taking away all the little fires that are annoying me, then I can focus on my main priorities, and teacher support is one of them. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And so what, you just walk in every day, or like, let's say all those fires are taken care of, right? You actually got time to focus on, you just walk in, you spend an hour, you spend like the whole morning, you spend like 5 minutes clock, you let them know ahead of time. There's some people that you need to that like you popping in, but are some people that like, oh, you're popping in, like I feel like I'm being watched. Like,
well, that's because that's what the culture is in that system. So if you, and a lot of times we do get teachers that come to us with PTSD from wherever school system they came from before. So yeah, we pop in and they shell up. We're like, relax, it's okay. But yes, be visible, be seen. One thing that I've learned and one thing that I do, I guess you could call it a system, is when I walk in, first thing I do is drop my bag, fill up my water bottle, and lap the building. So I'm lapping the building. I'm going around first thing in the morning, popping in on teachers, seeing how they're showing up today. Sometimes it's physically asking how you're showing up today. Sometimes when I just pop in and say, hey, how's it going? I can see, okay, you're showing up a little bit differently today. What support do you need? You know, or sometimes, obviously, as you build stronger relationships with the people in the building, you know what the support is. So you don't even have to ask any questions. Just you see that they're kind of in off mood. It's like, all right, let's make sure that we check in on her today. But yeah, my goal is to lap the building. We're K-8. So K4 is downstairs, 5-8 is upstairs, my office is upstairs. So I go down the upstairs hallway, 7th to 8th grade, come on down, hit K1, 2, 3, 4, and back up to 5, 6. They'll just lap the whole building, make sure everybody's cool. And then I can head to my office and start checking emails and doing stuff I need for the day. But having that eye-to-eye contact, that one-to-one conversation, that really helps with teacher support. And not just there in the morning, and then just being visible throughout the day as well. Again, they would never know when somebody needs a bathroom break, or just pop in. Sometimes I'll pop in. I told you, I'm a teacher at heart. Sometimes I'll pop in and they'll just ask, you know, can you help with this math concept? You know, math is my bag too. So I'll just go in, just grab the expo, and we'll just feed off of each other type thing, you know?
Okay, I like that. I like that. Have you ever had a teacher who didn't like you and has been?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how did you, go about that? How do you handle that?
Yeah, I would say nobody's ever told me that they didn't like me, but the vibes that you get just from other people and just from understanding that I'm not everybody's cup of tea, and that's going to be okay. Again, some of the same comments I get about toxic positivity, always smiling. That's a bad thing for some people. Honestly, somebody was like, they put it like this. They said, you are always smiling or in a positive mood, and it makes us feel like you don't take things seriously. That's what he said. So I was like, okay, I kind of get that. But to answer your question, somebody who doesn't like me, what I typically do is just, I'm intentional about not treating them any differently. If they treat me differently, that's on them, but I don't treat them any differently in the sense that if I need to show up to support, that's what I'm going to do. Support for you may look like me leaving you alone, but I'm still going to show up, show my face, you know, just throw hands up, a thumb sign, whatever it is. If I have to do observation, I'll do your observation, whatever. But I'm not going to come force you to speak to me, come sit in your room and have a conversation. I understand that I need you to know that I'm here. Need to know I'm present. If you need me, I got you. But I also know that the support for you is just send me an email. Don't call me to have a one-on-one conversation.
Okay. Any like curriculums that you appreciate or that you would like, or that you just think that other schools would benefit from implementing them, or anything on like the educational side, or any one of those like tips? I want to hear a little bit more from like Teacher Daryl of just like, what are some things that you think would be really helpful for teachers to know on the teaching side, or a resource that was really helpful for you that you think would be really helpful for teachers in the classroom?
Yeah, for me, so this is actually kind of recent and kind of new. So you asked for Teacher Daryl. Teacher Daryl didn't have this, but Teacher Daryl created this. And okay. It's funny that you, because we didn't even speak about this before, but I actually just created and worked with the team to create a curriculum. And the name of the curriculum is Choices. So the curriculum is a middle school curriculum. And in a nutshell, it's based on the work by Dr. William Sadlacek. He worked with Bill Gates. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Bill Gates Millennial Scholarship, where he pays for tuition for somebody, or I think 10 scholars, he'll pay for their full tuition. But Bill Gates was like, I don't want to just pay for somebody's tuition and then they not actually go forth and do good into the world. So he said, how can I prove that the person who I'm paying tuition for is going to actually, you know, make a positive impact on the world? So he partnered with Dr. William Sadlacek, and they researched the qualities of successful people post-college graduation. And then when they looked into their lives and looked into the qualities that they had, and they broke it down, and there are 8 different pillars, such as self-appraisal, such as the self-confidence, a strong support system, leadership qualities and abilities, goal setting, those types of things. So there's 8 different things that they found. They said, wow, successful people know how to set and follow goals. Successful people know how to have self-confidence, how to have mental toughness. So they broke it down into 8 pillars. And then what I did is I took that work and broke it down into a middle school curriculum that can be used during like, you know, advisory or homeroom or something of that nature, that teaches over 8 weeks those 8 pillars. Because again, my goal is to help students develop the skills that they need now to have choices for themselves later. So those same 8 qualities that successful people have, if I could teach that to our middle school students, how to develop these skills at age 12, 13, 14, then they should have the same result. So that's why we call it Choices.
Okay. Well, that's You know, usually like in on a plug, and I didn't think you had anything to plug, and that just it just worked out very perfectly like that. So it's called Choices. It's available. Is it currently available?
It is. We are piloting it now, and I have 3 schools that are piloting it. It'll be available nationwide in April of next year, April of 2024. So actually, if anybody's interested in piloting it, I say I'm looking for as much data as possible because I want to make sure that it is, effective. And I want to get some teacher feedback from different areas of the world, different areas of the nation, different strategies. It is just for middle school, though. We're piloting it from now to the end of 2023, and then going into mass production in April 24.
Okay. Awesome. Let me ask you this. What's the, you got the estimated price on that?
I don't actually, because right now for the pilot is just at cost. I'm not profiting from it at all. It's right. just cover printing and shipping, and we'll send it out to your school. We just ask that you give us the feedback. So that is, and then you can reach out darrellwilliamsjr.com to get information on that. But then once we get the feedback, once we get, you know, all the little nuanced details, and then with the books and the printing and how we're going to go, then we can come out with the price in April 24.
Okay. All right, guys. Y'all heard it here first. Choices Curriculum. Darrell Williams Jr. and Bill Gates collaborated to make this middle school curriculum to help your middle schoolers be successful, have choices in life. Awesome to hear. Any very last words before I cut off the recording?
Many very last words. I will just say, good teachers see subjects, great teachers see students, right? And again, just what that means to me is good teachers are going to show up and teach the content. That's fantastic. We need good teachers. Listen, if you are a good teacher, we need you. Thank you for being in our building. Thank you for showing up. We also appreciate those who go above and beyond. We know that you don't get paid like you should. We know that it's a thankless job. We know that it's tough. And I know, I want to encourage you really quickly just to let you know that if you are one of those that goes above and beyond, we see you. Right? You go above and beyond. I know that it's hard work. I know that it's taxing. I know that there are times when you want to give up. I felt that way too as well. I don't want that to be your reality. Somebody needs you. You may not see it now. Sometimes you're just planting seeds that grow a little bit later, but somebody needs you. Stay the course, even when it feels like it's tough, even when it feels like it's hard. If that is the mission and vision that you have for yourself, it's going to happen, but I guarantee you, you're strong enough to withstand, right? And you can make a difference in these students' lives.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?